This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Rappaport to the rescue with award-winning animal advocate, best-selling author, journalist, and pet products creator, Jill Rappaport.
Hi, welcome to Rappaport to the Rescue. I'm Jill Rappaport, having such a great time. I'm actually in Michigan right now, where I was born and raised, and I'm so excited to be here with my mother and my wonderful sister and my brother-in-law and their four-legged fur child, Howie. We are celebrating my mother's 97th birthday. I say she's 97 years young because she is sharp as a tack. I walk in and she said, "I don't know if I like that lipstick. Last time you wore a better color." I said, "How are your eyes better than mine?" And she did that without even having glasses on. She is the most intelligent, beautiful, wonderful person. I only hope and dream I can live a life like she has and get to 97 and hopefully more. I always used to say when my friends would meet her, they would all agree with me that she was going to be, if you remember this, on Willard's birthday list. Do you remember Willard Scott from the Today Show? And he would have the 100 Smuckers birthdays. And I always said, "Mom, you're going to be on that list and 100 plus, plus, plus." So we're on our way, Mom. I love you. You are the best mother in the world. And on another wonderful note, the last time I did my podcast, I was talking to you about my latest little rescue, Nathan Detroit Rappaport. I named him Nathan in honor of another hot dog company because he's a little red doxy. Detroit, my hometown, and I love guys and dolls. So it was the perfect name, Nathan Detroit Rappaport. If you remember from my last show, I told you that this little 14 plus, can you believe this? This little 14-year-old doxy was abandoned on the side of the road in the Hamptons. His paws were bloody. He's completely deaf, mostly blind. He has a heart murmur, enlarged prostate, major dental disease, and they left this little angel to fend for himself. Can you believe this? But as luck would have it, and I say as fate would have it, he ended up with me. And I cannot tell you what this little angel is like. He sleeps on my shoulder every night, and I feel like he's getting younger. He's like Dorian Gray. Ever since he's been home with me for the last couple weeks, he's starting to run around. He barks. You know, it's a funny bark because he's deaf, but he knows when the food is coming. He knows when it's dinner time. And when he sleeps, boy, does he sleep. And it's as if I had him from the minute he came out of his mother's womb. I couldn't love him more, as if I saw him being born right before my eyes. And he could be older than 14, but you know what? He's going to have the most blessed and beautiful life with me now for as many years, and I say years, as I know I'm going to have him. And Nathan Detroit, thank you for giving me the most beautiful gift in the world by coming into my life. Okay, on those two very sentimental, I'm tearing up here, notes, we have the most special guest coming up. I call her our good luck charm. We started this show, would you believe, 5 years ago this month with the one and only Meredith Vieira. I first got to know Meredith when she was the co-host of the Today Show and I was the entertainment reporter and then became the animal advocate. And Meredith is truly one in a million. There is nobody like her. She is as sweet, as beautiful, as genuine, and as kind as she is talented. And every year, we are so lucky to get her back on the show. Every year, she marks a new year for us on Rappaport to the Rescue by joining us, and we always catch up with her and hear what she's up to. She's a huge animal lover. We met and bonded over her dog, Jasper, and she's had several losses over the years, but this year in particular, Meredith has gone through a very, very difficult time. And she is going to be here coming up to talk about that and all of the incredible things in her life. She is truly a very, very special human being, and I am so lucky to have her back again. So please stay tuned when we come back, Meredith Vieira.
Hi, Want to know who the latest trendsetters are in Hollywood? How about Irish setters? Find out who's been spotted with Spot, chowing with her chow, and shopping for Gucci with their Poochie. Get the scoop on all the latest celebrity pet patter right here. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Rappaport to the Rescue. It's that time, our good luck charm. We never kick off a new year without having the one and only Meredith Vieira on our show. Meredith, can you believe we are starting the sixth year with you?
I cannot. If you want to call me your lucky charm, I'll take it. I'm so proud of you and Mark and everything you've done and Bill, and it's quite an accomplishment. It's amazing to be on for one season, much less six.
Exactly. That's why you're our good luck charm. And I should mention about Bill Brilloni. He had a very special engagement today, a big TV appearance, a big show he's working on. He was so upset. He said, can't we change the date? Can't we move the time? But he really wanted to be here. You know how much Bill Brilloni loves you.
And we
Train
love him.
Jasper. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Was Bill on Just Like That? I feel like I saw him on that.
Yes.
It was. Okay. I thought it was Bill, and I'm going, oh my gosh, look at him. That was so much fun.
Yes, because that's his English bulldog, Kristen Davis's character. That's his dog.
Oh,
and also,
wow.
He got Sarah Jessica Parker's shoe, her little kitten.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So Bill, obviously, he's the master of all the animals on stage and screen.
Totally. Totally.
So Meredith, I said in the intro, over the years, you know, we bonded at the Today Show and especially over our animals. And we used to talk about Jasper and then, of course, Felipe and all the animals you've had. But this has been such an incredibly difficult and very sad year for you. Since we caught up with you the last time, we always checked in with you and talked about your family and Richard and what you were going through and how he was doing. And you lost Richard.
We lost Richard actually on Christmas Eve, December 24th. Yeah. He had a rough summer, was doing better. And then he went into the hospital in October and he never came out. So the only blessing, if there is a blessing and all of that, was the kids came home. We thought he was coming out of the hospital. They kept telling us he's getting better. And then they'd have to put him back on breathing just for extra oxygen. And so they all came home at Thanksgiving. And that's when he took a real turn. And they all left their jobs. You know, they took a, you know, leave of absence. And they were with him every single day. He passed away. And that, I mean, how many people have that opportunity? And he was always aware. So they had lots of conversations. There was a lot of laughter coming out of the room, a lot of sadness too. We played a lot of his favorite music. You know, it's always sad to lose somebody, but at least we felt we had that time with him.
It's so hard to believe, though. I mean, you've been with Richard. How old were you? Like a cub reporter, right?
Well, I was at CBS, actually, in the Chicago Bureau. So it was right in the beginning of my experience at CBS News. And so I guess I met him in 83 and we got married in 86. So, you know, it was a long relationship. And he had MS when I met him. He had been diagnosed at the age of 25 at a time when there was nothing they could do for somebody with multiple sclerosis. So he was basically told, you know, go home and just smell the flowers. We don't have anything for you. Nowadays, they have a lot more
right
in their toolbox. But we'd had a lot of ups and downs. Anybody who deals with chronic illness knows how it goes and struggles. But he, you know, we also had a fabulous life. And I'm not taking anything away from that because everybody has their baggage, whatever it is. And we always thought he would somehow rally because he always did. But this time it was his lungs. It was pneumonia and it got him. It just got him in the end.
Well, I know that you're in this beautiful home right now, your summer vacation place. What is it like to have the first summer without Richard?
I got up here a couple of days ago. My brother came with me and my brother's wife, who had cancer, suddenly took a bad turn right after Richard died, and she died January 10th. So there's been a lot of heaviness in our family and extended family. So he came up with me just to sort of have a little solitude of his own. And I was glad to have another person, actually, when I walked in the house, because I didn't know how I would handle this. The Cape was really Richard's home.
Right.
His parents had bought a vacation home here when he was in college. I'm a Rhode Island girl. I like Newport and that area. But he was smart. Richard said, well, let's go visit the grandparents. And so our kids grew up coming to the Cape. And for them, that was heaven. So it made sense. And it is for me, truly now heaven. So, I mean, walking in, I'm glad I had my brother. But on the other hand, it's been comforting. I feel his presence here. His ashes will be scattered here. So in that way, because I feel he's at peace here, I'm at peace here.
Oh, and your children. I know you have the most bonded, wonderful family. And Richard was such an incredible influence on your three children, as you, of course. But you were so close as a family unit. Are the kids doing okay?
Yes, they are doing okay. Richard did not want a funeral. He was, nope. I just want my ashes scattered, but we wanted something to honor him. So we decided on a life celebration that we had at the end of May, actually, at our home. As his life space grew more limited because of mobility issues, our home in Irvington, particularly this little courtyard area we have, grew of more importance to him. He loved sitting out there. The minute it was warm enough, he was out there with just taking in the sun, knowing full well that heat is not good for people with MS, but he didn't care. He just loved just putting his face towards the sun and closing his eyes. So we had it there with, turns out he had a lot of friends. So it was a big gathering, but it was truly beautiful. And they all spoke. And, you know, I mean, every mother's going to brag about their kids, I guess. But I could hear Richard in their voices. They're all beautiful, beautiful speakers. They're funny. They're thoughtful. They're all the things that he was. And I think that because of their dad's illness, it was instilled in them even more, that sense of empathy that we've talked about, and goodness and kindness. And I saw it and I thought, well, I whispered to Richard and sort of looked and said, we've done our job. We've done our job. Yeah.
And, you know, I know we've talked about this before, and I know how you feel right now being in this place that was so special to the two of you. You must feel his presence all around you. And I'm sure you feel, Meredith, because you had almost 50 years together, that he's guiding you and he's still very much with you and your family.
Totally. Totally. And when something goes wrong, I know that's Richard, too. I'll go, you know what? Come on. Stop it. He was a little bit of an imp as well. But so I want to share with the audience, when you asked me to come back, I said, well, I don't have any more animals. And you were like, well, what do you mean? Our last pet, Felipe, you mentioned Felipe, who was 17, like his sister. I mean, I guess he was almost 18. And he was the one holdout. And on January of this year, it was January 19th, he had been, you know, he'd been sort of, he had some wasting, you know, he was old and getting a little frail, but it wasn't time. And I knew it wasn't time, but he came up and he sat with me on the couch. And I was just, since Richard's passing and then my sister-in-law's passing, I've been doing a lot of just sitting on the couch at night, just kind of thinking or whatever it is you do. And he came up, and I'm not, and I know you'll believe it, Jill. He came right up to me and he put his paw on me in a way that I thought he was telling me. He was telling me that it was going to be okay. And I firmly believe that I just felt this sense of peace from him. And then a little bit later, he left and went over to his bed. And in the morning, I got up pretty early. It was like 4:30 and he had passed away. And I really think he was telling me, I'm not going to put you through what you've just gone through. I'm going to just quietly go and you'll be okay. I mean, I get emotional when I think about it now, because you and I and Bill have talked about the intuitive nature of animals. And we saw it when Jasper died and the cat stood sentry next to him as he was passing away, like the guardians. I think they know. I think they're so loving. And it was a moment. It was really a moment.
Oh, my gosh, Meredith, that story is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The fact that what you went through literally in a 3-week time period.
I know.
Losing your husband, your sister-in-law, and then Felipe.
I know.
Wow.
A lot.
The person up above, he or she, was really testing you, right?
For sure.
Unbelievable.
For sure. And like I said before, I don't like to dwell on it in the sense that I know people are going through worse, and tragedy strikes everybody, but it's kind of how you deal with it. Okay, so this was something that was sent to me in a note about Richard's passing, and it's a family friend whose mom had died recently, and she sent me this, and I thought it was so spot on in terms of grieving. She wrote, I had my own notion of grief. I thought it was a sad time that followed the death of someone you love, and you had to push through it to get to the other side. But I'm learning there is no other side. There is no pushing through. Rather, there is absorption, acceptance. Grief is not something you complete, but rather you endure. Grief is not a task to finish and move on, but an element to yourself, an alteration of your being, a new way of seeing, a new definition of self. And I think that's an accurate depiction, at least from what I've experienced about grief. When people say to you, you'll be fine in a while, or, you know, like, you'll get through this, I think this is more accurate. It's incorporated into your being. And that's not a bad thing. But, you know, I just felt this really explained the journey better than anything I had heard before.
And so true. When our father passed away, you know, my sister, the wonderful photographer, yeah, Linda Solomon, who's sitting just a few
feet away here. Hi, Linda.
When our father passed away at only 63 years old, I remember the rabbi said to us, you'll never get over it. You just get used to it.
Yeah.
And that really is, you know, you go on, but you never get over it.
No. And I don't think you can. When somebody has touched your life in that way and been a part of your life, you can't remove it. It's there. And thank God it's there, you know, because with the pain comes a lot of fond memories and a lot of joy and moments. And, you know, he has a grandson, Cameron, who will be one on July 4th. And he got pops, as he was called, got to meet that little boy. And my daughter's having a little girl in November.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, how wonderful.
Life does go on, and there's a continuum to families.
Now, from family to the career front, and we've touched on this before, Meredith. I know you were one of the only people in the world in this business that knew when it was time to leave for you.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted you. They wanted to keep you. And you were like, I want a life.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to do something different. That doesn't happen with people in your position. But you still have maintained an incredible career, but on your terms.
Yeah, it was something that I had to do. You know, it's part of the reason why I've done so many different types of jobs. Because you and I've talked about this, the more irons you have in the fire, the more likely you are to keep working. Because, okay, you don't want a journalist. I can do a game show. I can do a talk show. I can, you know, you just, I wear a lot of hats.
And you love doing the game show.
I adore it. I adore it. We just finished shooting our 7th season. That's not hard. And this season, we did what nobody's ever done.
25 words or less.
25 words or less. This season, we went live. And the reason we went live was because to do something that nobody had done in game show history, and also in order to make our show stand out, and also because the business is constantly evolving. So you have to come up with ways to stay relevant. And I think they knew, well, she knows how to do live, so let's do it, you know. And I loved it because it was live. We went live in New York and Philadelphia, and we did very well. So hopefully the next season, we will add more markets to that and make that the new model for us, that we will be a live game show.
It's such a testament to you because game shows come and go much faster than TV shows. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's very risky and very few succeed, but they have Meredith Vieira. So come on.
You know, I appreciate that. But ultimately, and Alex Trebek said this, and I've said it many times as well, if you ever think that you're the star and not the game, you're sorely mistaken. Jeopardy has been on the air. Alex Trebek was amazing, but he understood, don't get in the way of the game. And I think that's very true. If you have a really good game, people are coming to that show because they love the game. And your job as the host, if you're good at it, is to keep it smooth sailing and always elevate the game. And I've done that. I did that with Millionaire, obviously, and I've done that with this game because I believe in them. And so if that makes me a good host, I'll take it. But ultimately, they're not coming for me. They might think you're a good way into the game, but they either like the game or they don't. And they happen to like the game.
Yeah, they love the game, but you're the face of it. So, and what's amazing, you know, you started out such a hardcore journalist, boots on the ground reporting, then Today Show host, and then this other side of you. And I always knew the zany, wild, fun side.
I'm so happy that I was in news when I was, and when it had to me a level of integrity that I don't see. Now, that I don't want to be unfair, because I know there are many, many hardworking journalists for sure, but it feels like we've all gone into our silos, our news silos.
Right.
So the people who are conservative, they only watch conservative news. The people who are liberal only watch liberal news. You know, everybody has their point of view and they want it basically echoed back to them. And I don't think that's good. I don't know how you get to the truth just by regurgitating what you think.
But even the liberal people are being censored. I mean, come on,
totally.
Look what's happening. So you can't even be who you are on TV and news anymore.
No, but I think that breeds this alienation among people. Instead of sharing our views and really discussing them, we all go into our bunkers, and some of them we're forced. Like you said, right now, the climate in this country, if you open your mouth, good luck.
Well, look at Terry Moran on ABC.
Exactly. That's a great example. And when that's happening at a place like ABC, that pressure is on. But, you know, we've had this conversation before. The minute the bean counters took over CBS News, and I was there when it happened, it was Larry Tisch. Not to put all the blame on Larry Tisch, but it became a business, and the news was a business model. That's when it all started to change, because it was all about profit. The bottom line was the dollar, the almighty dollar. And that is not the right climate for a news organization. CBS in its heyday, you stayed away from it. It was its own thing and it was protected. It was the fourth estate. And now it's like, it's basically an arm of some corporate greed to me in many ways. So I can go on and on about this.
But you were a star at all three networks, CBS, then ABC, then NBC. And speaking of ABC, have you seen the Barbara Walters documentary?
You know what? I don't have Hulu. When it went over to the Disney, I'm just stubborn. I said, I'm not getting another one. And somebody said to me, just a trial, watch it. And then I said, I don't want to do that. That's not right.
There were some beautiful shots of you on The View, but I was wondering, because they had a lot of people speaking about her, and I assume they came to you because Barbara adored you.
They came to me and they were very kind, and it was when Richard was extremely sick, and I just said, I can't. I'm here. I can't do it. And so it just never worked out. But yeah, they had like three dates where there was a possibility of me being interviewed, and in every case, I was at a hospital and not about to leave. So I have no idea. I mean, is it good, the documentary? I hope it is.
You know, I found it entertaining. I would have loved to have seen a lot of different types of people, and I would have loved to have seen you in it to get different perspectives of coworkers. But your experience with her on The View, I would have loved to have heard that, because she was really quite an amazing human being and really changed your life, didn't she?
She did, but she was a very complicated person. There were a lot of sides to Barbara. There was the journalist side. She was one of the most dogged journalists I've ever seen, best prepared, because she'd had to crawl her way and scratch her way up. I mean, you know, she didn't get a lot of support in the business. They were not on her side. It was male dominated, and she was always treated as lesser than. So she had to prove herself over and over and over. And that brought a toughness to her. Be a tough cookie anyway. I mean, you know, she dealt with, her dad was an entertainment, what do you call it?
The Latin Quarter.
Yeah, Latin Quarter. Yeah. And so she had that world, but her sister was challenged. And so things that she wanted to do in life, she couldn't do. Like, she could never learn to drive because her sister didn't drive, things like that. I never heard resentment. She named her daughter after her sister, but I'm sure there was a part of her that might have even been a combination of guilt and a little bit of, you know, sibling rivalry too. Like, I'm always going to be second to my sister, even though she understood it.
But from a working standpoint, when she puts you on The View, not only as a panelist, but as the moderator, that says so much about you, because you were really the driver. You know, she was at the other end of the car, but you were hired to be the driver of the team.
She kind of did want to drive it, but she did, which it was always a push and pull with her. Because I say, either I'm hosting it or I'm not. Either I am doing it or I'm not doing it. Because she always had her opinions and she wasn't shy about sharing them. But I think part of the reason why she put me in that role is because she knew my journalistic skills would play well there. And she wasn't planning on being on all the time. That's why Joy was brought on. Joy was going to be there when she wasn't there.
Yeah, Joy's in the special.
Oh, I'm sure Joy was in. But
yeah,
I can't see there were people who were peripheral in her career, but they are names that probably were in the special too. I don't know. I think that she could be tough, bordering on a little bit mean-spirited You know, and I think part of that was the time, like her relationship with Diane Sawyer was.
Oh, they really get into that.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
Those two really were pitted against each other. And I've seen it. I've seen it through the years, how they pit women against each other. And there was a lot of jealousy there. And
But Meredith, you said you've seen it over the years. And we've known people that we've worked with. And seen it. But you've never gotten in those trenches. You've avoided that your whole career. How is that possible? Because you were always at the top and you never had those rivalries, or you never engaged in that behavior, I should say.
I don't know. It's not my style. I just don't. Life's too short. I always believed in collaboration. I always felt that there was more power in the unit than the individual. And so I was all about that. I mean, I can't say that I've never been jealous of people, because I don't think that's true. But I've always a different drummer? I've always
marched to the beat of a different drummer.
Yeah.
My career was not like a lot of other people's. It was, you know, I did a lot of twists and turns because I was following what was right for me in my life at any given moment. And so I wasn't just the brass ring, because there were many times I got the brass ring, but then I realized that's not fulfilling me. So I swerved off. And there were times where, you know, well, people would say to me, wow, what a mistake you just made. You gave up this lucrative career for what? And I mean, people can make you feel insecure pretty damn quickly, but I always knew at the end of the day that it was right for me. So I couldn't really look at other people's careers and compare them, because mine was very much my own.
It shows. I mean, everything you've done, all facets of the business, and always with a great attitude. And everybody always says you are the sweetest, kindest person in the business. And
what they say about you.
Well, I didn't reach the level of success and have the shows and the career that you've had, Meredith, but thank you. I think my shelter animals may agree with you.
Well, what else matters?
I get a lot of wagging tails. You get great comments. But no, it's really amazing what you've done. Do you think you might ever go back into a talk show situation? Because you're so great at that, and that you don't quite have to deal with the news in the same way.
I don't see it right now. If the last 6 months or whatever have shown me anything, that life is short. And right now my head is really in, my grandmother name is Lulu, because my middle name's Louise. So Lulu is, well, they'll call me whatever they want to call me. But I'm really in Lulu mode, and I want to figure out a way to be there for my children and my children's children in a way that is helpful for them, and that allows me to be part of that life. Because I'm 71. I'm not going to see my grandchildren get up into their 30s and 40s. I'm realistic. I pray to God I see them long enough to.
What do you mean? My mother's 97. Come
well,
on.
I know that's good, and I know. So I try to stay fit. So, but you know what I mean. I mean, I right now, that's where my head is, to be totally honest with you. I have a lot of decisions I have to make. And they always say when you're in the midst of grief, when it's fresh, that's not when you make the decisions. Allow yourself some breathing space. So I am doing that. But I don't see another job per se. But you never know. Who knows?
Well, considering where you're at now, and you do have some time to really think about life and enjoy your life and take time to smell the roses, say, what about getting another animal, rescue doggy or kitten or cat?
I really want to, but right now I'm in the middle of like trying to figure out other stuff. I really feel taking an animal into your home, that's a big responsibility. I don't want to take in a dog and then put them in a whatever, like a, what do you call
oh,
it?
A boarding facility.
Facility, because I want to go here, there, whatever. I don't want to do that. So is it in my future? I hope so. But right now I'm just trying to get grounded again. My son, who has a little baby, he has a dog, Arthur, and my daughter has two cats.
So they're your grand doggies and grand catties.
Yeah, and I love them. I mean, when I went to visit my son in Washington, Gabe, because that's the other two live in New York, Lily and Ben, but Gabe and Allie and Cam and Arthur live in D.C. And I honestly had as much fun walking Arthur as I did hanging with Cam, because they're such characters. I think my son's like, really, Mom? I said, yeah. I mean, they're both adorable. They're both was so much fun. And I don't know, I just really enjoyed it.
Meredith, again, the most magical time being with you. Thank you so much for giving us your presence, your intelligence, your wisdom. And I know what you've been through this year, and you're just amazing to me. You're an inspiration to everyone. And thank you for being here.
I feel the same way. Thank you. Congrats on such a successful podcast, and deservedly so. And thank you again, I say it every year, for what you do for your animals and to keep that on the forefront of people's minds and to remember what matters in life. And you are a blessing. So there.
Oh, I'm not going to keep going. I got to end on that great note.
Take care, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you all for joining us today on this edition of Rappaport to the Rescue.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.